Why do you suppose the circle became so universally symbolic?
Well, because it's experienced all the time. Experience in the day and the year, just as we've said, and you experience it in leaving home, going on your adventure, hunting, or whatever it may be, and coming back to home. And then there's a deeper one also, that mystery of the womb and the tomb. When people are buried, it's for rebirth. I mean, that's the origin of the burial idea. You're put back into the womb of Mother Earth for rebirth.
And Jung kept returning to that theme of the circle as being the sort of universal symbol.
Well, Jung used it as a pedagogical device, actually, what he called the mandala. This was actually a Hindu term for a sacred circle.
Here is one of the pictures.
That's a very elaborate mandala. You have the deity, the center, with the power source, the illumination source, and these are the manifestations or aspects of its radiance. But in working out a mandala for oneself, what one does is draw a circle and then think of the different impulse systems in your life, the different value systems in your life, and try then to compose them and find what a center is. It's a kind of discipline for pulling all those scattered aspects of your life together, finding a center and ordering yourself to it. So you're trying to coordinate your circle with the universal circle.
To be at the center.
At the center. The Navajo have that wonderful image of what they call the pollen path. And when you realize what pollen is, it's the life source. And it's a single path. The center. And then they will say, you know, beauty before me, beauty behind me, beauty to the right of me, beauty to the left of me, beauty above me, beauty below me. I'm on the pollen path. So the little cosmos of one's own life and the macrocosm of the world's life are in some way to be coordinated. Well, for instance, among the Navajo Indians, healing ceremonies were conducted by way of sand paintings, which are mostly mandalas, on the ground. And then the person who is to be treated moves into the mandala. There will be a mythological context that he will be identifying with, and he identifies himself with that power. And this idea of sand painting with mandalas and used for meditation purposes appears also in Tibet. In the great tantric monasteries outside of Lhasa, for instance, Gyutdo, they practiced sand painting, cosmic images and so forth, indicating the forces of the spiritual powers that operate in our lives.
Now, what do you make of that? That in two very different cultures, the same imagery emerges.
Yes. Well, there are only two ways to explain it. And one is by diffusion, that an influence came from there to here. And the other is by separate development. And when you have the idea of separate development, this speaks for certain powers in the psyche, which are common to all mankind. Otherwise, you couldn't have, and to the detail the correspondences can be identified. It's astonishing when one studies these things in depth, the degree to which the agreements go between totally separated cultures.
Which says something about the commonality of the species, doesn't it?
Well, yes. That was Carl Jung's idea, which he calls the archetypes of the collective unconscious.
What do you mean by archetype?
An archetype is a constant form, a basic fundamental form which appears in the works of that person over there and this person over here without connection. And they are expressions of the structure of the human psyche.
So if you find in a variety of cultures, each one telling the story of creation, or the story of a virgin birth, or the story of a savior who comes and dies and is resurrected, you're saying something about what is inside us and the need to understand.
That's right. One can say that the images of myth are reflections of spiritual and depth potentialities of every one of us. And that through contemplating those, we evoke those powers in our own lives to operate through ourselves.